This land is your land. This land is mine. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Okay, folks, welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. Got another interesting guest lined up for this evening, another 9/11 related guest. Very important topic that we're hitting really hard right now because, of course, the 7th anniversary is coming up next month, in just a couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. And to this day, this biggest crime in American history on American soil still remains unsolved. And the perpetrators, regardless what side of the argument you fall on, are still walking the streets. This is very serious stuff here, folks. I don't know why the American public, for the most part, seems to be totally apathetic to this issue, but this is very serious. How can it be that 7 years later, there has not been anyone brought to justice directly involved? You know, Osama is still running loose, and we've never been presented any evidence that he was actually even behind it. We've just been told that he was. And, of course, they offer us the confession tapes, but there's all kinds of problems with those confession tapes. It's not even the original Bin Laden on the tapes. So we're hitting this thing. We're going to hit it hard. We're going to continue to hit it hard because this biggest crime scene in American history, again, remains unsolved. The whole crime remains unresolved, and we need to get to the bottom of this. So our guest this evening here on the People Speak Radio, and, by the way, the website is thepeoplespeakradio.net, and before I introduce the guest, if anyone has any comments or questions for our guest during the broadcast over the next hour, you can call in internationally toll-free at 877-489-6350. Or in Canada and the U.S., toll-free, you can dial 888-228-4494. Be glad to hear from you this evening. Okay, with no further ado, let me bring up our guest. His name is Robert Bowman. He's an aeronautical engineer. He's got a PhD, in fact, which is very important because people are always saying, you know, oh, what is your opinion? What do you know? You know, ask the experts. And, of course, the experts they always refer you to are people that are on the government's payroll, either work directly or indirectly for the federal government, or at least are dependent on, you know, federal grant money. And so there's an obvious bias there. But here tonight, again, just like we had Stephen Jones a few weeks back, here tonight we have one of those experts who isn't on the government's payroll, who doesn't have an axe to grind, and who is bringing into serious question the events of 9/11. He is, in fact, a member of the Scholars for 9/11 Truth, Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and several other different 9/11 Truth-related groups. So, again, with no further ado, let me introduce Robert Bowman. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Good to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you. Like I was saying, it's always good when we can have one of those PhD-endowed experts who isn't going along with the official story. And by the way, how does that happen? How did you become such a heretic in your field?
Well, actually, you know, I can't understand how any scientist or engineer can leave the government's official conspiracy theory. It is so obviously false that it just boggles my mind.
Now, I understand that. I can relate to that. How did you suspect from the beginning, or did you, like most people, just accept carte blanche and then later look more closely and realize, wait, something's wrong? Well, how did you come about to this understanding?
Well, my initial suspicion that there was something wrong was when the event was taking place 7 years ago, and I sat there watching those buildings and saying, where are the interceptors? And then when the towers fell, I said, wait a minute, this can't happen. You know, it just doesn't happen. buildings are built to withstand that kind of thing.
Right. I mean, they literally just pulverized the dust. They came down at a phenomenally rapid pace, fell in on their own footprint. All the indications are there of controlled demolition. In fact, there isn't anything you would expect that isn't present in the footage of the collapse of the towers. Everything is there that you would expect from a controlled demolition.
Right.
And yet, again, they act like you're so paranoid. But the area, of course, we want to focus on this evening is your area of expertise in the area of aeronautics. And, of course, inevitably, we're going to have to discuss the latest NIST report dealing with the collapse of Building 7. I'm sure you've been looking into that. It's just every bit as ridiculous as I had anticipated. But before we get into some of that, let's talk about what you have brought to the table in your area of expertise dealing with aeronautics. How about specifically, Flight 77, the alleged plane that hit the Pentagon? There's a lot of problems with that official story, isn't there? I mean, just the whole flight path, for example, and the competency of the alleged pilot, Hani Hanjour, to have pulled off the maneuver. Let's talk about that.
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second.
Oh, really? Was I cutting out?
I was talking, and then all of a sudden, you were at the end of a sentence, and I...
Oh, wow, sorry about that. We're having some technical difficulty, I guess. I hope they're hearing me over the air. No, I was just mentioning, I'd like you to comment on Flight 77. You know, it underwent a very difficult maneuver, assuming it was Flight 77, whatever it was, underwent a very difficult maneuver prior to hitting the Pentagon. You know, is that even possible as a person who's been in this field for a while, aeronautics? Again, you have a PhD in aeronautics.
Yeah. Well, my suspicion is that besides the difficulty of a pilot pulling off that kind of an extremely complex, precise maneuver, it appears to me that maneuver that they have described is beyond the software capabilities of an airliner's control system.
Right.
Airliners have software that limit the number of G's you can pull and so forth in order to help the pilots avert a circumstance where they will injure passengers.
So in other words, the onboard computers wouldn't have even allowed the maneuver. What was it, a 270-degree downward spiral turn?
Right.
And, you know, wouldn't that have actually rendered the passengers and even the pilot himself unconscious?
Well, it depends on just how tight that turn was. And, you know, we don't even know that something did that maneuver. I mean, we don't have firsthand evidence that anything, an airliner, a drone, a missile, or anything pulled off that maneuver.
That's true. But I'm saying, you know, going by the official story, you know, the 270-degree, if that was a commercial airliner, you know, piloted by Hani Hanjour, you know, how could he have done it? A, his own pilot instructor said that he was so bad he would never fly with him again, you know, just 6 weeks before the attacks. How did he acquire those skills in just 6 weeks' time?
Well, you know, I don't think... there were hijackers piloting any of those airplanes.
Yeah, I don't either.
Whatever hit the Trade Center towers and the Pentagon, I believe, were under remote control.
Sure, I agree. Absolutely. I mean, there's just, while we're on the subject, Flight 175 that allegedly hit the South Tower, that underwent a very difficult maneuver as well, didn't it?
Well, I haven't seen the, you know, flight path of that.
Well, not necessarily the flight path, but just at the last moment, it banked to the left. It actually dipped. It tilted to the left, and it almost missed the tower entirely. It just caught the very corner of it. And I guess, you know, the complicated maneuver to execute that kind of a move, I mean, the complicated mechanics of it, you know, it's very difficult to adjust the flaps just right. And again, that would seem to imply some type of ground-based remote control, not a pilot actually sitting behind the controls. Just question after question. Just way too many problems with this official story. Have you looked at the Building 7 report at all? It's actually quite large, but there's been many just hellacious statements made in it, just like the previous report, you know, dealing with the two main towers collapse. Have you looked at that at all yet? Are you hearing me, Dr. Bowman?
I heard you just now, but there was a big dead space there. I'm sorry.
Wow, I don't know what's happening tonight.
Well, I'm driving through the mountains, and I think I lost cell phone support.
Oh, I didn't realize you're on the road. Oh, that would explain it then. The problem's on your end, not ours. Yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, we caught you on the road. I didn't realize you were on the move.
Yeah, well, I had hoped to be settled before now, but we had some mechanical difficulties we had to take care of.
Oh, okay. Well, I appreciate you still taking the time out here in your busy schedule. What I was asking you about is, the NIST report, Building 7. I'm sure a lot of the listeners are curious to hear what you have to say about that. That just came out, of course, the other day. Had you had time to look at any of that?
A little bit. It seems to me that they have come to a conclusion, which, of course, is consistent with the government's official fairy tale, and attempted to work back to some kind of evidence. But in the end, I don't think they discovered any, because there is absolutely no evidence of it coming down because of fire or any cause other than controlled demolition and explosives.
Well, what's so amazing is that building had won an award earlier in the year in 2001. the award was given to, you know, Silverstein Properties for being the most sturdily reinforced high-rise steel structure in the United States. It had recently been renovated, and, you know, some of the tenants wanted to bring heavy equipment in there that would require ceilings twice as high as the average floor in there. So they reinforced it so you could literally remove every other floor in the building and it wouldn't affect its integrity. And yet, the thing came down like a whole bunch of toothpicks and bubble gum.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that's the case, if fires, and keep in mind, folks, the fires in that building were confined to no more than, what, about 7 or 8 floors, and they were localized on each floor. There were pockets of fire. They weren't raging across the entire floor. And that's supposed to be what brought the building down. You know, what I got to laugh about, Dr. Bowman, is originally NIST was claiming that it was damage done to the WTC-facing side of Building 7 that was responsible for its collapse. Now they've dropped that excuse altogether, haven't they? I don't even talk about that in this latest report. Suddenly, that's a non-issue. That has been what the official 9/11 story cult defenders have touted. All of a sudden, now they have to abandon that because their gods at NIST have abandoned it. So, in a sense, NIST has brought more disrepute to the official story than there was before. It's laughable.
Yeah.
My, oh, my.
Well, you know, what I talk about all the time in my tour around the country, I spend a few minutes on 9/11, talking about the impossibilities of the official conspiracy theory, but I spend the majority of the time talking about the cover-up of 9/11, and the exploitation of 9/11.
Sure.
To deceive us into unnecessary and illegal wars of aggression, and to take away our constitutional rights with the misnamed Patriot Act.
Right. Sure. You know, on that basis alone, if people look at that evidence, that should tell them something. Hey, wait a minute. How come they were so anxious right from the beginning? Within a month of the attacks, they had this Patriot Act thing all ready to be signed into law. How could they have drafted that thing up in such a short time? Well, we know from Ron Paul, for example, that that bill was in existence long before 9/11, and they were trying to pass it.
Right.
They didn't have an excuse. You know, 9/11 comes along and boom.
Yeah.
They just couldn't wait to grab that power. And we know that they were planning the Afghan War and the Iraq War long before 9/11. They just needed the excuse to do it. On the State Department's website, for example, in June, just 3 months before the attacks, they gave a warning to the Taliban. We're promising you a carpet of gold or a carpet of bombs. It's up to you. Well, they didn't take the carpet of gold, obviously, so they got the bombs 3 months later.
Yeah.
Unreal. But, yeah, let's talk about the cover-up, because that is a very important issue. In fact, you know, when we talk about the 9/11 Commission, many Americans still think that that was the final answer, closed book, end of story, case closed, you know, just like the Warren Commission. But we have nothing but cover-ups in both instances. You know, it's amazing how much time went by after the attacks before they even had the thing put together, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Well, of course, the Bush administration didn't want an investigation at all.
Right.
And it was only with the determined efforts by the Jersey Girls and some other family members of victims that finally Congress forced the administration to form a commission.
Yeah.
And, of course, when they did, they stacked the commission with people that they thought they could control. And even then, they turned out not to be able to control all of them. Senator Max Cleland resigned from the commission because it was a sham and designed to fail.
Yeah.
And I've talked personally with both Governor Kaine and Congressman Hamilton, the commission co-chairs.
Yeah.
And they acknowledge that there are outright lies in the final report.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that their more important conclusions were omitted from the final report. See, they didn't write the thing. The White House did.
Wow.
And
that should tell you something right there.
Now, the White House flack determined who was to be interviewed and who was not and under what circumstances and what testimony could make its way into the final report and what didn't.
Yep.
And as you know, they didn't even mention Building 7 in the final report.
Yep, not at all. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Chemical, of course, was personal friends of Condoleezza Rice.
When you combine that whitewash with the confiscation of audio tapes, videotapes, black boxes, and other evidence by the FBI, it's clear that regardless of who was responsible for 9/11, the subsequent cover-up was itself a conspiracy involving elements of the White House and the intelligence establishment.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, how ridiculous is this? They thwarted it for 14 months. By the time it was allowed, and, of course, Bush handpicked all the commission members, you know, Zelikow, personal friend of Condoleezza Rice, on and on. But all the evidence by that time had been removed and carted off and destroyed. So, I mean, how can you know, what kind of investigation could it be anyway?
Yes.
There were experts there on the scene from around the country that came to volunteer their services for free, and they weren't allowed to touch anything. It's, of course, a felony to tamper with, remove, and or destroy evidence from a crime scene. And here were the feds doing all of this. Unbelievable. Astonishing. I tell you what, We got a question I just got through the text here. His name is John from the Canadian Rockies, and he asks, Dr. Bowman, I grew up in New York during the construction of the World Trade Center. At the time there was concern about the safety of the building, we were reassured that the WTC could withstand a direct hit from the largest passenger aircraft at that time. Oh, I think we lost him. Yeah, looks like we lost him. Sorry about that, folks. He had something come up. We caught him on the road. He was, as you heard him mention, he was in his car at the time. So hopefully, it looks like he drove in an area where there's bad reception. He doesn't have a good lineup with a relay tower, so we're going to try to get him back on the line. But in the meantime, this is a good question, and I'll certainly have him answer when he gets back on. But, you know, I can confirm that several experts, one man who helped design the World Trade Center himself, said that they designed the towers to withstand an impact from a 707, which was a plane that was roughly the same size as a 767. And, in fact, it even had more fuel capacity. So it could withstand not only the impact, but the explosion of the fuel. And, in fact, he said, I think it was DeMartini, I think was his name, who, by the way, died on 9/11. But he was quoted in a documentary in January 2001, just, you know, 8 months before the attacks, as saying that, and that's ironic because this was before, you know, 9/11. He's talking about how sturdy the structure was designed before 9/11. So it's not like he's looking back with hindsight and trying to trying to defend his designing of the building, you know, so that he doesn't look incompetent. He said this before 9/11. That's why this statement is so significant. It was, I believe, it was a Discovery Channel documentary that he was quoted in. Anyway, he said that the buildings were designed kind of like the meshing in your screen door, you know, the screen meshing. Just so, you know, so that it would withstand actually multiple impacts from large commercial airliners and not be affected any more than, you know, you can take a pen and puncture it through your screen window several times and the screen isn't going to collapse. You know, the screen is this complicated meshed system that is designed to, you know, withstand multiple you know, probably 90% of screen windows in America have several punctures in it, especially if you have kids. Kids are great for that. And, you know, have you seen how your screen still holds together? Well, again, this is what DeMartini said about the construction of the World Trade Center towers. They were built in that same fashion, like a screen, so that they could literally withstand several impacts. So, you know, this is why it's so laughable for NIST to come along and state regarding the two towers that they collapsed because of the plane impacts and or the fires. And, you know, then they said it was the removal of fire retardant materials around the steel girders and beams, you know, that caused the buildings to collapse because it exposed the steel to the fires. Well, again, that's just laughably ridiculous because it requires to weaken steel. It requires over 1,800 degrees. And that temperature must be applied steadily over an extended period of time. But we find that not only did the steel weaken, in some cases the steel melted and even outright vaporized, which was admitted by FEMA in its preliminary report in released May 1st, 2002. Actually, not the preliminary report. It was their final report. And then later, of course, NIST came out with their so-called investigative report. But FEMA's first report admitted that some of the steel that they had examined had showed signs of having melted and even vaporized. And they admitted that, you know, it's not believed that any of the fires in those buildings was hot enough to melt or vaporize steel. Of course not. The government's admission has been and still is that the fires achieved a maximum of 800 degrees prior to the collapse. You know, it was hotter for the first couple minutes after the planes hit. You know, the fuel was probably burning around 1,400 degrees. But after the fuel had burned up within a minute or two, the temperatures dropped to 800 degrees, continued to burn at around 800 degrees after that time. And so, you know, how do you get melted steel? How do you get weakened steel from 800-degree fires? It's ridiculous, folks. But this is the lie that the so-called experts at NIST want us to believe. It's laughable. It's not scientific. It's not even what you would call common sense. You know, my 14-year-old son has more common sense than that and would never approve of a report like that being released to the public. He would see that that's not scientific. Anyway, folks, we're going to take a short break, and hopefully by the time we get back, we'll have our guest back on with us. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak Radio Show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the table by the relief on the fast, I saw my people and they stood there hungry.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the People Speak Radio Show. This is your host, Charles Giuliani, this evening. Again, the website is thepeoplespeakradio.net. And if anybody had any comments or questions, if you wanted to call in, as yet we don't have the guest back, but you know, you can talk to me. Hopefully the guest will be back on soon. You know, if you want, you can still call in with questions, comments. I'll try to do my best. I've done quite a bit of research on the subject myself. I can do the best that I can to try to answer that. Or perhaps by the time you call in, maybe he will be back on. But anyway, the number to do that, if you're calling internationally, it's toll-free, 877-489-6350. The toll-free number to call in the Canada or the U.S. is 888-228-4494. Anyway, let me get back to what I was talking about before the break. You know, it's very significant to notice the statements that NIST has been making over the past few years, because that alone should tell you that we are, in fact, dealing with a cover-up here, that they're lying. Why are they lying? Well, I'll leave that up to you. I know why they're lying. Based on my research, I can tell you they're lying because they're the ones that pulled off 9/11, folks. But nevertheless, even if you don't believe that or perhaps don't want to believe that, you can't deny that they're lying and that they have a lot to hide here, a lot to cover up. Just like Dr. Bowman was saying, you know, they didn't want the 9/11 investigation. Bush himself personally, Ashcroft, Cheney, Rumsfeld, All of them were fighting tooth and nail against Congress establishing an investigation. Cheney was quoted in the Washington Post, for example, stating that he didn't want an independent investigation. He did everything he could to thwart an independent investigation. Amazing. And sure enough, it wasn't independent. You know, Bush handpicked all the commission members. You might recall his first choice was Henry Kissinger. Now, you know, how much more of a cover-up could you get than that? Kissinger? An internationally renowned war criminal? He's wanted in just about every South American country, folks. He can't step foot anywhere in South America. He's been warned. We will arrest you immediately and bring you up for charges for all of your war crimes, you know. For example, his invasion on Chile against Salvador Allende in 1973. By the way, that invasion was launched on September 11th of 1973. Isn't that interesting? But anyway, Kissinger was Bush's first choice. Now, how much could he be concerned about an independent investigation with Kissinger being his number one choice to head it up? Oh, come on, people. You can't tell me you don't see through this. You can't tell me you don't see something desperately wrong here. Henry Kissinger, one of the biggest treasonous sellouts of all time. An enemy of humanity. A traitor against the human race, not just against this country. Anyway, that didn't work out. He realized, you know, that he had to make known some of his business ties, so he declined the offer. And then his next choice was Keene. Well, Keene has had a long history of cover-up, activities. And then Zelikow. Good heavens, Zelikow. Go Google Zelikow. In fact, go to Wikipedia and type in Zelikow. There's an interesting article in there. They quote from him himself. He was asked in an interview once, you know, what his area of expertise was, you know, going to college. What did he study? He studied... he didn't use the word, but that's what it is. He studied propaganda, folks. He studied how to manipulate public opinion such that even generations after an event has passed that the public's opinion has been manipulated on, that manipulated opinion would still remain in place generations thereafter. In other words, to so thoroughly deceive the public that they wouldn't be capable of thinking otherwise even decades later. They would still cling to that cherished idea that had been drilled into their head. That was his area of expertise. And this was Bush's choice to play a key role in the commission to decide what information they would use in the report, who they would interview, who they wouldn't. Unbelievable. And then, of course, you know, we see that even though the commission was, all hand-picked by Bush, he still didn't want to take any chances that information might leak out to the public that he didn't want them to have, so Bush took all kinds of other measures to thwart the investigation. He cut back on the time allotted them. He cut back on the financing. You know, they got $9 million. The commission that investigated the shuttle crash got $50 million. Why did the 9/11 commission only get $9 million? This was dealing with a far more serious matter than the shuttle crash, the biggest crime scene in American history, right? And they only get $9 million? Then he wouldn't allow them to interview certain staff, federal staff, unless there was someone from the State Department present telling them what they could and couldn't say. He wouldn't give them access to most of the documents they requested. The few that they were allowed to look at, most of the material had been blacked out. And then Bush didn't want to meet with the commission. Remember, first Condoleezza didn't want to meet. She finally agreed, but then she lied through her rotten, unbrushed teeth there. Then a couple months later, they were asking Bush. Bush refused. He finally agreed under these stipulations. Cheney had to be present. The proceedings were not to be recorded in any way, shape, or fashion. It was to be a private, not public meeting. And they were not to be under oath when they gave their testimony. You're going to tell me they didn't have something to hide here? Doesn't this stink to high heaven? But now we get to the NIST report. And here's where the cover-up really comes in and really becomes obvious, as if that isn't obvious enough. I'm getting word that, they're not able to get Bowman still, folks. He is in a remote area, which is really unfortunate. But, no problem. I can just ramble on here, endlessly. In fact, I'll have to watch the clock because sometimes I get rambling too much and lose track of time. Let me talk about NIST. Now look at what NIST did. You would expect if there was any legitimacy to the official 9/11 story, that the NIST panel would finally bring that out, silence the skeptics' voices once and for all, put an end to their questions, finally answer everything, and, you know, we could all go home happy now, put this thing to bed, and finally move on, right? NIST did no such thing. To the contrary, NIST actually gave us more reason to doubt than we had before. Again, couple that with all of the obfuscations that took place, you know, the attempted thwarting of the 9/11 investigation, not cooperating with the commission, you know, on and on and on, cutting back on the money and the time allotted them, you know. Couple that now with some of the statements I'm going to be sharing with you that NIST came out with. This absolutely has got to convince you that this is a cover-up. If you can't see it's a cover-up, you're either brain dead or you are, in fact, a Bush supporter who will go down with the ship defending that scoundrel who isn't even the legitimate president in the first place, come hell or high water. You know, you're either a traitor or you're just mindless. Anyway, oh, you know, I think we might have Dr. Bowman. Are you there?
No, it's not Dr. Bowman. It's your faithful producer, Mike. How you
oh,
doing,
hey,
Dr.
Mike. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I just thought I'd call in. You know, I really appreciate these shows you're hosting, and I know you're more than just a host. You're an activist. I think this would be a great opportunity. I called Dr. Bowman's place of destination. He's staying at a friend's house, and they said that he's driving in a motorhome, so that's why, and he's driving through a remote area with a lot of dead spots, which is why you had the faulty communication in the first place,
right.
And now you've completely
yeah.
lost him. So Dr. Bowman extends his apologies, and he'll be back later. But let me use this opportunity to ask you, Charlie, as an activist in 9/11, have you ever made a journey to New York City and met in person any of these people who were eyewitnesses to 9/11?
I've been to New York. I haven't been to New York for any of the protests, although when I was there, I made my own protest. I went to Ground Zero,
yeah.
And I was yelling out, Bush did 9/11. I actually got some standing ovations. Several people were clapping and giving me the thumbs up, you know. Very few of them were giving me dirty looks. Nobody yelled at me or swore at me or threw rocks at me or anything like that. I haven't actually met in person, but of course I've interviewed, you know, scores of people connected directly and indirectly with the attacks. You know, William
well,
Rodriguez.
Well, you know, Charlie, this program offers you a point of a source from which to become an activist, and I think that's what we're going to help you, allow you to do, is put you more into touch with these people so that you actually become a visible face, if you'd like, of the 9/11 truth movement, if you'd like, you know, via the radio show or whatever way you want. It's up to you. Because, you know, guys like William Rodriguez, who we've had on the show in the past, William Rodriguez, you know, as you know, Willie, I'm sure you've talked to him a lot of times.
Oh, sure, yeah.
He was actually homeless under a bridge with his family. This is a guy who was married, who received the Medal of Freedom Award, the highest award this country can give. He was invited to the White House, he told me, 8 times. I think it was 8 times, and, you know, he met President Bush and everything, and, you know, he at one point, Willie said, you know, I really appreciate these honors. He felt like telling Bush this. I really appreciate the medal and all this attention, but I really need money, because when the World Trade Center went down, I lost my job. I don't have a source of livelihood. And it's like, I think, you know, a guy like Willie is a down-to-earth kind of guy. He's a common, you know, just not common, but he's just an ordinary person. You know, he's a people person. He's just a normal person like you and I. Well,
right.
Kind of normal. We are kind
right.
of normal, aren't we, Charlie? We are,
I would hope so.
Some people would say we're obsessed with 9/11. Some people would say we're obsessed with 9/11, but we aren't. We want the truth. And I think you belong with these kind of people. I think you and Willie would get along great. He's a hypnotherapist. You know that.
Well, oh, no, I didn't know that, actually. No kidding.
Yeah, he was... I helped book him on some shows on Pacifica in Los Angeles, and the host there was also a hypnotist, so they get along quite well. And he went down there and he met with the producers and everything, and, you know, he travels all over the country and the world. You know that.
Hey, let's see if he can hypnotize Bush and get him to tell the truth.
you know, that reminds me, if anyone in the audience has questions here for Charlie, or anything, you know, feel free to text them into us, Or I don't know if we have another line open, but our toll-free lines are still open. But Charlie, I want to ask you one other thing. Who was the most impressive 9/11 guest you've ever interviewed?
Actually, it blew me away when I interviewed on here Stephen Jones a few weeks ago. When he said that he found pieces of unignited thermite, to me that was just, you know, the cherry on top of the cake. That was the final piece of evidence that just blows this thing right out of the water. And the fact that, as always, his research is totally boycotted. You know, nobody's talking about it. This should be on the front page of every newspaper, the top story in every news broadcast, and no one's discussing it. It's unbelievable. It's disgusting. But to me, that was, you know, the final piece of evidence that just clinches this thing, and it's the final nail in the coffin of the official 9/11 story.
Charlie, would you say that your interview with Dr. Jones was great because he presented, I guess what you'd call evidence or research? It
right.
wasn't just talk. It was, yeah.
Right, right. This
and
was
what
not
would
in
you
the
say
lab.
Were the three most... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, no, I mean, it's all above board. It's out in the open. He's not hiding. You know, everything is published or going to be published. He tested the sample. It tests positive for thermite. It could not be anything else. It has the exact elements and right proportions of each element, you know, it couldn't be anything else, you know. And then he ignited these pieces in the lab. They produced the exact temperatures and you know, expected results, just what he would expect from thermite. I mean, there's no question. It has the, you know, the right coloring, the right consistency, everything. What is that doing
and
in the WTC dust?
It was published in a peer-reviewed journal. That's highly important to me, if I remember correctly, in an engineering journal, civil engineering journal, if I remember. That makes a huge difference to me.
Yeah, because, oh, yeah, yeah.
A body of his peers looked at it.
Right, but the fact that it's getting almost no attention in the mainstream media, it's just absolutely, I mean, this is major, this is significant. You know, interestingly, NIST, in their building performance report for the two main towers, they were asked by several scientific teams around the country to review their computer simulations, which was the basis for their conclusion as to why the two main towers collapsed. Did you know to this day they have not released that information? So, you know, here it is. Independent investigators like Stephen Jones are begging to have his papers peer-reviewed because he can prove his point. And here's NIST not allowing their stuff to be peer-reviewed. And yet everybody's accepting it. Or at least they're told to, anyway. You know, this is phenomenal.
It is. It is. I know you've interviewed so many people in the 9/11 truth movement. One of the people that I found fascinating was that millionaire in New York City, I believe, Jimmy Walter?
Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah.
Whatever happened to him? I don't hear much from him these days.
Yeah, I'm due to call him. I haven't talked to him for a while. He was out of the country. In fact, he said he was going to spend the duration of this administration in exile over in Europe. I don't blame him. He got a lot of flack. You know, he used his own money. I think he spent at least $1 million putting front page ads. He managed to get an ad in the New York Times, a full page ad, exposing 9/11 as an inside job. And he got a lot of response. He sent out free, again, at his own cost. He sent out free DVDs, you know, hundreds of thousands of them, you know, exposing 9/11.
I have to ask you another thing, Charlie. How did you get involved in doing this? I mean, when 9/11 happened, were you like the rest of us, or how? When at what moment did you start doubting the official story?
Well, I had been researching government corruption going back to the early 90s, and I had become aware that, you know, our elected officials, for the most part, are nothing but little puppets that dance to Wall Street's tune. So I was aware that they had been staging fiascos. Like, I followed Waco very closely. I knew that they lied and covered up that. I followed Oklahoma City. I knew that they lied and covered up that. So, I had known about previous false flag operations like the USS Maine, the Lusitania. They set that up. You know, the Pearl Harbor, they sat back and let that happen. And then, of course, the Gulf of Tonkin, you know. And just before 9/11, I found out about Operation Northwoods, where in 1962 the Pentagon was planning to kill thousands of Americans in fake attacks that they were going to blame on Castro and try to get us to invade Cuba and take Castro out for them. So when 9/11 happened, I figured, yeah, this has got to be, because I knew in 1993 they attempted to bring at least one of the towers down, and the FBI had its fingerprints all over that. You know, they had they had an informant who infiltrated the group. His name was Salem. And he told the FBI, he says, look, I know the date, time, place, everything. I can stop these people. I can replace the explosive with a harmless powder if you want. The FBI actually said, nope, don't bother. Don't worry. Thanks for your help. We'll take over from here. Just let everything happen according to plan, and we'll catch them in time. Well, they didn't. They let it happen. They wanted it to happen. He caught them on tape. They didn't realize he had a tape recorder on his person and recorded them telling him, oh, don't replace the powder with a harmless powder, you know. Don't replace the explosive. They wanted this to happen. Their fingerprints were all over this. And
so,
why?
Charlie, you mean on the morning when those planes hit, something in your head said possibly, you know, this is possibly another government.
Sure. Especially the way the buildings came down. I said, that looks like a controlled demolition. These son of a guns are at it again. It's kind of a given, you know, when you see this pattern over and over and over and over and over. It's like there's no exceptions to the rule, you know. It's literally just about everything that happens, government fingerprints are all over it. Because their ultimate objective is total power. And it's not just under this administration, although I have to say this administration has whipped it into high gear. The corruption far outdoes anything seen previously. But what we're seeing under this administration is just a continuation, a rapid continuation, but a continuation nonetheless of what has been going on for decades. And, you know, this is the old story. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? This government has absolute power, and it is corrupting absolutely. They realize, hey, we got absolute power. We can take control of everything now and force nations or bribe them or coerce them or whatever to do whatever we want. We can rule the whole world, and so that's what's going on. The neocons are just trying to whip that into higher gear at a faster pace. And so 9/11 was a very big part of that. It's enabled them to invade several more countries. They're still trying to go into Iran and may yet very well do that in the next couple of months. And if they pull that off, they might, you know, if they stage something to facilitate that here, they could declare martial law nationally, and we won't even have another election rigged or otherwise. You know, these scoundrels could remain in power. Bush has already set the precedent to do that, that he could remain indefinitely in the White House.
I always hear the conspiracy movement being criticized, and, you know, people are saying, you know, why don't you people just move on? And there's that motto, 9/11, never forget. I think it should be modified. 9/11, never forget. We must find out the truth.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Right.
I mean, 9/11 was the basis for the paranoia about war on terrorism.
Right.
9/11 got us into Afghanistan and Iraq.
Right.
9/11 was the basis for, you know,
trashing the Constitution.
Being, yeah, the Patriot Act, Homeland Security, the whole thing. So
yeah.
It's what the Bush administration has really thrived off of. That's what their administration has been about.
They use it as a cloak to hide behind their torture fiasco. You know, well, we need to do this to protect the American people. If I hear that one more time, protect us from what? We got wide open borders. Any illegal that wants to come in here from the Middle East, you know, real terrorists, could easily come in here now with wide open borders. How will we protect it?
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Every year since 9/11, the International Terrorism Report, this is something that's been coming out since the early 80s. It's an international body, I believe, operates under the auspice of the UN. Anyway, they produce an international terrorism report. And everyone since 9/11, especially since the Iraq War, has showed that incidents of terrorism have gone up 600-800% from one year to the next. Condoleezza actually called the office that does the report and asked them to temper their numbers down because it's bad PR for them. So, you know, they're not waging a war on terror. They're waging a war of terror. They're increasing terrorism, which, of course, is what they want to make their war look legitimate. They would love to see more terrorist attacks, you know. And if they don't see them, well, they'll just make them up again.
Charlie, I can't thank you enough for your hosting this show, and I promise you we'll have a lot of great guests on, including those in the coming weeks that you can announce later on. I have to go, but I'm sorry Dr. Bowman can't be with us.
Yeah, well, hey, no, that's certainly understandable, no problem.
We'll invite him back when his car or his motorhome reaches a safe destination sometime.
Yeah.
I'll talk
to
you later, Charlie. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Okay, folks, I guess I just got a few more minutes left here. I just wanted to touch a few important points in the NIST report dealing with the two main towers, just to show what a cover-up this is. And, of course, the latest report on Building 7 is ridiculous. And, you know, to say that those few fires and just, you know, 7 or 8 floors or whatever was responsible for bringing that tower down. If that's the case, we better dismantle all high-rise steel structures around the world immediately, because if just a few small pockets of fire on, you know, 7 or 8 floors is enough to bring a whole tower down, 47-story tower, especially that one that was the most heavily reinforced in the country, then there's no safety out there at all in any of these high-rise buildings. God forbid someone should ever flick ashes from a cigarette, and boom, the whole thing's going to come. I mean, it's just ridiculous that they offer this slop and call it science. But the initial report that they come out with, the original, I mean, the first report dealing with the two main towers, they made statements in there. For example, they said that they found no evidence of molten steel at ground zero. Well, they could legitimately make that statement because by the time their investigation had started in April of 2004, all that evidence had been removed. So, yeah, of course they could say they found no evidence of molten steel. But then they went on to state that if there was any molten steel, and of course there was, they have to say this because there was tons of molten steel that was found. They said if there was any molten steel, it could be accounted for by the presence of flammable materials buried in the pile that would have caused the steel to melt inside the pile. That is absolutely ridiculous, folks. You can't have temperatures rise under insulating layers of ash and debris at all, let alone 2,000 degrees from 800 degrees to 2,800 degrees, which is what is required to melt steel. Do you see what they're selling you? There's no oxygen getting underneath that pile. It's sealed off. It's insulated by layers of ash and debris. How could the temperature rise at all, let alone 2,000 degrees? But listen to what else they said, and then I'll end on this. They said that they found no evidence of explosives at ground zero. But then later they admitted in the same report that they never tested any of the steel that they examined for explosive residue. Can you believe this? That's like saying, we did not find Mr. Jones, any evidence that Mr. Jones was involved at the crime scene. And then later to say, we never tested the crime scene for Mr. Jones's fingerprints. I mean, unbelievable. And yet these guys are, you know, well endowed with PhDs and, you know, have top credentials. This is a, you know, top scientific panel, the government's most important and significant engineers and, you know, experts in material science, and this is what they come up with? Folks, I hope you can see, if you didn't before, that this whole thing is a fraud. It's a massive and major cover-up. Why? Because your government did it, that's why. Your unelected, White House-stealing, election-rigging government. This president is not legitimate, not only because everything he's done has been against the Constitution, but because he was never elected by the people in 2000 or 2004. What a fraud, folks. We better wake up and fast. Anyway, that's all the time that we have for tonight, unfortunately. But I just want to remind you, tomorrow night, guys, we're going to have, I won't be the host, but the people speak the same time, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern. We're going to have Scott Tillett, a publicist, along with his wife, Andrea Ramirez, a healer. She's going to be our guest tomorrow from 8 to 9 p.m., so you don't want to miss that. I'll be back with you again next week for another great guest. In the meantime, have a good week, folks, and we'll see you next week. Take care.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of the fast, I saw my people, and they stood there.